I'm telling you right now, I've been looking forward to interviewing you, and not just because you're famous and good at sports, but because, you know, in the short time I've known you, you've taught me a lot about passion. And we'll get into that in a moment. I want to just give you a few thoughts, and then I'll maybe ask some questions from a perspective that to me is very unique from Steve's perspective about the subject of passion. And I want to show them to you from kind of the scene that led up to David's battle with Goliath. Okay, so if you want to follow along with me in 1 Samuel 17, the day that David went to fight Goliath, one of the interesting things about it is that he didn't know he was going to fight Goliath. And you'll see in a moment that he was really just completing an errand, an instruction from his father. So we know that David was a teenager. We know that he was tending his father's sheep. We know that he would go and play music for the king, Saul. And now there's a battle happening and the lines are drawn up. And it says that Jesse, verse 17, 1 Samuel chapter 17, said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They're with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines." So it says, verse 20, pay attention to this. "Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other, and David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were." So I read that to you to say, number one, you know, it was a simple instruction that David was following, not a great opportunity that he thought he had, that positioned him to be used by God to defeat the enemy that day. And I love the language. It says, early in the morning he got up, which for a teenager is a miracle. Amen?
Amen.
And it says, right, and it says that he ran to the battle lines, not even knowing what was waiting there. And so I thought about that idea of running to the battle lines and rising up early and following a simple instruction. And I wanted to give you this first point, and I want to ask a few questions about it of Steve. But I wanted to say that passionate people, one characteristic of passionate people is that passionate people carry out small assignments with a willing spirit. How do you know if you're a passionate person? How do you become a more passionate person? Well, passionate people carry out small assignments with a willing spirit. David, who was the future king of Israel, is delivering cheese and bread to his brothers. How demeaning would that have seemed? I'm the future king. I'm not a pizza boy. I don't work for Domino's. Get somebody else to take the cheese and the bread. But he did it with a willing spirit. And, you know, I thought, Steve, so many people see you doing great things and, you know, bringing down giants on the field and accomplishments and stats. But I was wondering, what are some of the small assignments that you have carried out with enthusiasm along the way that brought you where you are today?
One, for me, is rooting for other people. You know, I think that's a characteristic that I try to have, and I have to. It's more of an assignment to me because I wasn't taught that. So I have to make sure I'm consciously doing it and making sure that I'm doing that. Spend a one-on-one time with people behind closed doors, not out in front, being seen as that person, but just taking that time. And then for me, it's a small thing because, and I'll say it first, is, you know, being a daddy to my little girl. Because I only have one little girl. I have two boys. And it's very easy to play catch and wrestle and be all that a dad and a son can do. But being sensitive, thinking before I say something, all those things, it's an assignment for me because I didn't have any sisters growing up. You know, I'm still working out on this husband thing. So, you know, for my daughter, just not being a father, but being a daddy to her is very important. And so that's why.
Do you laugh sometimes when people are envious of what you get to do because they don't know kind of what goes into it behind the scenes?
Yeah, you know, what was that couple of weeks ago when they said I jammed my finger and I dislocated through the bone and required 5 stitches and for them to put it back in place? You can have that. So, but I truly believe that if we have the opportunity to spend a day in someone else's shoes, I think we would gladly give them their pair back.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk sometimes on Sunday if I'm getting done preaching and you're about to play. And say, do what you do, because I certainly couldn't do what you do. You could do what I do better, closer than I do what you do. Does that make sense? But, you know, the thing about what both of us do that I think we shared in common is we do something that's in front of a lot of people that we spend our whole week getting ready for, you know, in ways that people don't see. And that's not to celebrate just what we do, but everybody in the room can relate to that to some level. Is that even if you don't do something really publicly, there are a lot of small things that bring you to that. Like, I don't think there's anybody who knows anything about your career that would define you as anything other than passionate. If nothing else, that's a word that people use to describe you. I wonder, where do you think that passion comes from?
Well, when you gave me this question, I looked for the right answer. I was thinking about trying to find the right answer. And to be transparent and to be very much like you is, to be honest, is one of the things that I know why now, after going through this opportunity of looking, is some of the most important and impactful people in my life that had the biggest opportunity to root me on and tell me, hey, go Smitty, reach for the stars. You know, you can be anything you want to be. I never heard it. And so for me, I am passionate and I want to be good at whatever I'm doing. It's because I never felt and I did not realize what it felt to be rooted on. And so that's why I'm so passionate. It's like, you know, and also too, is if I can't do my job at the ability that I can do it, which gives me the ability to stay here in Charlotte, then that means I have to go back home and I have to hear, see, I told you. And, you know, I don't want to deal with that. And that's one of the reasons why I was very much, when my 10-year reunion came, I was eager to go back. You know, I was, you know, but my wife, she said, you know, is that the right mindset? Should you go back like that? I was like, no. And so I didn't go. But man, I wanted to go. Because it was some
take
folks.
A look at me now.
Yeah, it was some folks I wanted to walk in there like,
yeah,
you know. But it was a great and it was a great opportunity. I would have probably really embarrassed myself and left a bad taste in people's mouths if I'd have went there and showed out. Mm-hmm. And so it was good I did.
That's actually a good transition to the second thing I wanted to talk about, because the second thing we see in David's life and in any passionate person's life, this isn't as much fun to talk about, but we should, is that passionate people must guard their strength or it will become a double weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I use David to illustrate this is because, you know, one of the verses that you and I were talking about a few weeks ago when you were in rehab and trying to get better.
It's a treatment.
Yeah, in treatment.
Because rehab sounds like I have a problem.
No, I didn't mean it like that. So in treatment. But crazy people go to treatment too. But when you were healing, you were getting better. We were talking about Psalm 51, verse 12, mm-hmm. and it was a verse that I felt like God gave me to share with you to hang on to. And this is from David. Much later in his life, at a different situation, he says, restore to me the joy of your salvation. He's praying to God. He's calling out to God. And he says, and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me. And that idea of a willing spirit, you know, well, we were talking about that verse and how David actually prayed that after he sinned and committed adultery with Bathsheba. And even though God had his hand on David's life, he committed a great sin. And so we were thinking about how the same impulsiveness that made David willing to say, I'll fight Goliath, which you're going to see a little bit more at the end of this message, may have been the same kind of impulsiveness that got him in trouble when he saw a woman that wasn't his wife, and he said, I want her. So the same thing that said, bring it on to Goliath, he said, bring it on to the wrong woman. And that impulsiveness can work both ways. So in that context, you know, instinct can become impulsiveness. There's a flip side to passion. If you're a passionate person, your greatest asset can become your greatest liability. So, has that ever happened to you?
Never. I have no idea what you're talking about.
So, for example, when we first were meeting together, I remember you asked me, it was a pretty straightforward question, and I liked it. You said, what's one thing that would surprise me about you that people wouldn't see in the pulpit? And I said, without hesitation, I don't know if you remember, mm-hmm. I said,
temper.
My temper. And I just saw your face relax because we had not ever spent any time together. And you were just like, did you really just say that because you're a preacher? I was like, oh, yeah, let me tell you stories. And I started telling you about the times where I flipped out. And then you started sharing some stories. And it was like all of a sudden we were like competing for, you know. And
I don't remember that either.
Yeah. But anything concussions. So why did that surprise you to hear me say I struggle with my temper?
Well, one of the reasons is because a lot of times when you sit out there, you believe that you understand that person, or you see them, or you know them. And sometimes when we sit in that seat and we're just hearing somebody, it's easy to identify with them when they're giving you a message, when they're telling you things that you enjoy, you want to hear. And so for you to say that, it just shocked me because obviously I've never seen you, never seen your temper out on the stage. But it's also just kind of shows you that people don't always, you know, when people look at you or make comments or leave comments at the bottom of an article about you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll stop by myself on that one. But sometimes people don't realize if those same people at the roles reversed and they get to see you, how you act at your home or act in that situation, would they be saying the same thing? And so it's just real difficult because you sit up here or you stand somewhere and people think they identify with you. And they actually have no idea what you go through or what you experience or why you responded that way.
Mm-hmm. So to bring back the same question in a different wording, how has the same passion that has made you so successful gotten you into trouble and caused you to struggle?
Well, one of the reasons with the word, we're using the word passion, that I've struggled with is, if everyone has ever seen me, I always, my son Boston, who we call Bam, is the opposite of
this
me.
This kid has great hair.
Yes.
His hair is amazing.
Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like
a gene pool. I'm off center, I forgot. Oh, okay, yeah. So he's just like me, but one key element he doesn't have. He smiles, and I frown a lot. And so when he was a baby, he used to do what they call the daddy face, and he frowns just like me. But a lot of people see me on a football field, and they say, well, he seems unhappy, or he's always frowning. And, you know, for me, really, I've been so passionate, and I've just wanted to accomplish and want to be successful that I haven't enjoyed the journey. And inside I've kind of enjoyed it, but outside you see he's always frowning. He's just, because it's all about it's all about not feeling valuable. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, I can't smile about this because I haven't accomplished my goals. I haven't accomplished what I wanted to do. And so that passion has overtaken my happiness. but I've been happy.
Right.
I've been enjoying it.
Right.
But I haven't really displayed it. And I haven't even forced myself to, hey, you know, you're in the National Football League. You as a young, when I was a shorter version of what I am right now, is this is all I want to do. Now you're doing it and you're complaining about it. Man, get over it. Either enjoy it or stop doing it. You know, and I don't want to stop doing it. So I'm trying to enjoy it more and more. And it's been fun.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk in a minute about how you've changed. And, you know, we were thinking about how there's a fine line between passion and obsession. Maybe obsession is a good thing sometimes, and sometimes it can be a bad thing. But with passionate people, one thing that sets people apart who do the things that God has called them to do. And I hope that this interview doesn't just turn into, you know, lessons about what it's like to play professional football as much as it is like just how to approach life passionately and how to realize that we're all dealing with the same internal struggles and we each have a calling. This is something I try to preach. So this weekend you may see me talking to a football player. In a couple of weeks we may be interviewing or showing a video of a mom, a single mom who's raising her kids with passion, and it's the same passion. But what I've noticed about passionate people, whatever they do, I'd like you to write this down, number three. Passionate people interpret intimidation as an invitation. Think about it for a moment. So here's David. He hasn't even been at the battle. He's just back home tending sheep. And he gets there on the day of the battle. And it says in verse 23, 1 Samuel 17:23, that as he was talking with his brothers, just doing his job delivering the pizza, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled away from him in great fear. So the thing that everybody else fled from, David was willing to face and walk up to. And they were hearing the same voice. They were hearing the same threats. They were looking at the same situation. But one person interpreted that intimidation from Goliath as an invitation to do something great for God. And you've got to learn how to, I think, reinterpret intimidation, the things that intimidate you in your life, and realize that the people who do those things for God, it's not that they don't hear those shouts. It's that they press past them. And they realize, well, if something is that difficult, it must be worth it. So I'm pressing back the intimidation, and I'm going to look at it as an invitation to experience God in a greater way. Now, the reason I wanted to bring that up in this interview is because when people see you do incredible things and they wonder, how do you do that? And you come across as such a confident person. Does anything intimidate you?
Well, on the confidence part, I'm really confident in football, not because, you know, I'm confident because of my preparation, of the things that I've done and the hard work that I've put in. You know, I really truly believe it's a, you know, playing football and to be able to play the way I play is a gift. I mean, especially at 5'9", it's a gift. But my preparation and the things that I've done, my confidence is in my preparation, not in actually what I think I can do. So that's where my confidence comes from.
Yeah.
But as far as what intimidates me, failure intimidates me. And that's why I work so hard, not to be a failure. And also, too, as far as on, you know, as far as with David and Goliath and seeing that, I would have been one of those guys running out there just because if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out swinging and trying.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to go out by hiding.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to get, if you're going to get got, you know, you better get got some way, some other way than hiding behind a rock.
Right.
You know.
I'm going to sling my rock.
Yeah.
I'm going to sling my rock. I love that. Well, I mean, what are some of the things that you have to push through beyond just that general idea that people wouldn't see? Again, the stuff that when they see you so confident, they have no idea that you had to push through what before you did it?
believing that I have value.
But see, that sounds ridiculous to most people because they're like 13 years in the league. You know, anybody who knows anything about football, how could he not feel valuable? So I think some, like, convince us that you struggle with not feeling valuable because you look pretty valuable.
Great example is when I first met you, the one of the things I struggle with is having a lot of friends. I was a loner. One of the reasons I go back to the most important people, impactful people in my life, never told me that as much as I needed to be validated by those important people. So a lot of times I sat in that pit. So that was woe is me. So I was a loner. And so when you're a loner, you're going to find out, you know, what they say, idle time is the devil's workshop. So for me, idle time was formulate a plan, formulate what I want to do. So I decided, hey, I wanted to play ball. I wanted to play football. How was I going to learn? So a lot of times, back in the day, you're sitting in your room and that, you know, the radio, you didn't have all that other stuff that we have now, but the radio had the antenna going and you listen to music, you know, and then you got the paper and the ends of the cassette tape to record that song that came on, you know, so you were trying to record it. And so for me, I would sit on the floor and practice catching the ball. And so a lot of times that's where my times went. So for me, listening to music, especially old school music, when I listen to it, it brings me back to where I was, sitting in my room. So a lot of those times, or riding a bus, listening to a Walkman.
Come on, somebody.
You know, and so so all that stuff, so pushing through that, you know, and just realizing, hey, these are the things that I don't do well, and I have to push through them. And I got to make myself available to guys on my team. I got to make myself available to non-football players. I got to make myself available to my wife, to my daughter. I got to broaden my horizon in whatever thing I lacked. And for me, was being transparent, being open, because I'm an introvert.
And you probably only got about 13 years left to play for the Panthers, by my calculations. But looking into beyond football, you know, taking the passion that you have, how do you think you're going to take the passion that you've had for the game that has been so much a part of your life and then make it the next part of your life and your calling?
Well, for me, the biggest thing in my passion is I've always formulated a plan. Like my mind, I'm either two speeds. I'm either up or unconscious. And so when I'm up, I'm thinking and formulating a plan for this offseason, which is this year, this offseason, all the things I want to do. So I'll go in there, look at all of my weaknesses. I examine myself. Did I watch enough film? How many routes did I run good? How many passes did I drop? How many great passes I made? How many great passes did I make real easy that the dude on the couch that had a chicken wing, three brownies, coleslaw, a bag of chips in his bag, in his lap, think he can catch it, you know? So, like, all those things. So I'll chart that. And so I'll just look at all the things that I need to improve on. Did I carry my work into my home? Did I spend enough time with my kids and with my wife? And did I also spend enough time with myself so I can recharge? And so I'll just look at all those things of how and what I need to improve on and then try to formulate that plan and go, okay, this is what I need to do better. And also look at the bad habits that I've created in my life in that season of life, because you don't know until you go back. And then also, too, sometimes husbands got to do that very thing we don't like doing, is checking in. Hey, babe, how am I doing? You know, and that's really important, because whether you want that or not, you need that.
And I'm out of time. I wish you could see the rest of this message, but actually you can. You know, we put all of our messages online in their entirety for free for you to access, elevationchurch.com. getgodsword.org. So make sure to take some time this week and get God's word into your life. Any way you can get God's word into your life, it's going to make you better. And it's going to make a difference, whether it's a large amount of time or small amount of time. Any time you set aside to hear from God is time well spent. And I want to thank you for spending your time with me today on the Elevation Experience. We'll see you back next time.